escuelas oficiales de idiomas de la Comunidad Autónoma de Canarias. Pruebas de certificación de nivel intermedio B2 de inglés. Convocatoria ordinaria de 2022. Prueba de comprensión de textos orales. Esta parte consta de 3 tareas. Escuchará cada grabación 2 veces. Escuche y lea las instrucciones al principio de cada tarea y realícelas según se indica. Las respuestas escritas a lápiz o en tinta roja no se calificarán. No está permitido el uso del diccionario. El uso de cualquier dispositivo electrónico queda prohibido durante toda la prueba. El móvil tendrá que permanecer apagado y guardado. No escriba en los recuadros sombreados, son espacios reservados para la calificación de las tareas.
Task 1. Listen to 6 radio advertisements, 1 to 6, and match them with the phrases B to J. Write your answers in the table on the answer sheet. There are 3 phrases that you do not need. Advert 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute to read the phrases. Example, advert 0.
Summer seems even brighter when you've been inside a while. It's time to drive again with Honda, KBB.com's 2020 best value brand. You could get a great deal on the 2020 Passport or 2020 Pilot with financing as low as 0.9% APR on select models. Visit the Honda Summer Clearance Event today.
Advert 1.
This is a government broadcast. Your current playlist is prohibited and will be shut down immediately.
Thankfully, that's not a real message. But for the people of Burma, things are different. The government strictly controls nearly all media, but independent radio broadcasts are providing uncensored information. Most people can't afford a radio, so Amnesty International needs your help to send one to Burma for £12.50. As you enjoy your playlist uncensored, help those who don't have that privilege. Click on the Amnesty link now.
Advert 2.
Hello, you. I guess this'll be the last time we see each other. When we met, you were only a bit of fun, and then you went and grew on me. I'll really, really miss you. But I need some more oomph in my life. Anyway, I hate long goodbyes, so I'm selling you on Auto Trader.
We've been helping Britain buy and sell cars for 35 years, and with 3 times more potential buyers than any other site, we're the best place to sell. Auto Trader, sell your car today.
Advert 3.
Oh man, how can I ever repay you? It's just like totally incredible. I've never had anything like it. You've just totally transformed my life. Nothing I can ever say or do from this day forward can possibly express how amazing you've made this day.
Give someone you know the Nokia 2730 on 3 pairs you go this Christmas, and there's a chance they might react like this.
Give us a kiss, man.
But even if they don't, secretly, they'll be really pleased. Just £59.99 on 3.
Advert 4.
It's 1914, and explorer Ernest Shackleton attempts to cross Antarctica. His ship is destroyed by sea ice. The men clamber to their lifeboats, adrift in a polar wasteland far from safety. They Find out what happened next at the free Enduring Eye exhibition, now on at the National Library of Scotland.
Advert 5.
Vaseline Intensive Moisture has been keeping the whole family's skin amazing for 40 years. And it's better today than it's ever been. Vaseline Intensive Moisture, keeping skin amazing.
Advert 6.
Have faith in your future. Know that you're destined for more than a paycheck. You were born to live your purpose. Join a community of believers seeking higher education at Nyack College. Apply or transfer to a degree in business, nursing, social work, ministry, music, and more. 95% of students receive financial aid. So apply now at nyack.edu, Nyack College. Have faith in your future.
Listen again. Example, Advert 0.
Summer seems even brighter when you've been inside a while. It's time to drive again with Honda, KBB.com's 2020 Best Value brand. You could get a great deal on the 2020 Passport or 2020 Pilot, with financing as low as 0.9% APR on select models. Visit the Honda Summer Clearance event today.
Advert 1.
This is a government broadcast. Your current playlist is prohibited and will be shut down immediately.
Thankfully, that's not a real message. But for the people of Burma, things are different. The government strictly controls nearly all media, but independent radio broadcasts are providing uncensored information. Most people can't afford a radio, so Amnesty International needs your help to send one to Burma for £12.50. As you enjoy your playlist uncensored, help those who don't have that privilege. Click on the Amnesty link now.
Advert 2.
Hello, you. I guess this'll be the last time we see each other. When we met, you were only a bit of fun, and then you went and grew on me. I'll really, really miss you. But I need some more oomph in my life. Anyway, I hate long goodbyes, so I'm selling you on Auto Trader.
We've been helping Britain buy and sell cars for 35 years, and with 3 times more potential buyers than any other site, we're the best place to sell. Auto Trader, sell your car today.
Advert 3.
Oh man, how can I ever repay it? It's just like totally incredible. I've never had anything like it. You've just totally transformed my life. Nothing I can ever say or do from this day forward can possibly express how amazing you've made this day.
Give someone you know the Nokia 2730 on 3 pairs you go this Christmas, and there's a chance they might react like this.
Give us a kiss, man.
But even if they don't, secretly, they'll be really pleased. Just £59.99 on 3.
Advert 4.
It's 1914, and explorer Ernest Shackleton attempts to cross Antarctica. His ship is destroyed by sea ice. The men clamber to their lifeboats, adrift in a polar wasteland far from safety. They find out what happened next at the free Enduring Eye exhibition, now on at the National Library of Scotland.
Advert 5.
Vaseline Intensive Moisture has been keeping the whole family's skin amazing for 40 years. And it's better today than it's ever been. Vaseline Intensive Moisture, keeping skin amazing.
Advert 6.
Have faith in your future. Know that you're destined for more than a paycheck. You were born to live your purpose. Join a community of believers seeking higher education at Nyack College. Apply or transfer to a degree in business, nursing, social work, ministry, music, and more. 95% of students receive financial aid. So apply now at nyack.edu. Nyack College. Have faith in your future.
This is the end of task one. Now turn to task two. Task two. Listen to an extract of a speech by Anna Wintour, the British-American editor-in-chief of Vogue, and answer the following questions according to what you hear. Write your answers in the table on the answer sheet. Do not use more than 8 words. Question 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the questions.
Anna, and so I want to start by saying what an honor it is to be here for me today. It's a real thrill for me because I come from a highly academic family. I had a brother and a cousin at Oxford, a sister at Cambridge, a grandfather who taught law at Harvard. Both my parents went to Cambridge, so obviously deeply intimidated, I left school at 16 and went straight to work. It's a path I sometimes regret, especially seeing my own children make friends for life at university and seeing how incredibly important that time was to them for figuring things out. Thanks to my own English training, I arrived at New York in my New York magazine in my early days in Manhattan, knowing how to do a little bit of everything. The men who ran the magazine weren't that familiar with fashion, and they were just so relieved when they realized that I could chat with the designers, talk to the advertisers, produce shoots, write and edit. I was a one-woman show. My point being that when you understand the nuts and bolts of how something works, in my case a magazine, in the case of all the young people I hire today, it's probably an iPhone 6, it makes you better at what you're doing rather than just being good at one thing. People who are very narrow in their focus are really frustrating. This is also a problem for many large, long-established companies. They tend to get very, very set in their ways. One of the things I always look for, whether it's in a collection or a piece of writing or a photograph or a job candidate, is a point of view. My advice to you is to trust and to cultivate your taste. This is a real moment in our culture when your opinion matters. Everybody wants to know how you work, what you like, how you think. It's important to reach people of your generation today to know what the so-called millennials are up to, because there is, for the first time in decades, a true generation gap. A lot of people in the positions of authority, decision makers, want to reach your generation because they understand how powerful it is that you're communicating through social networks in such a vital way. If you like something, tweet something, put it up on Instagram, that's an incredible tool. And it's one that influencers all over the world want to harness. You have a voice simply by the choices you make and the way that you live. So that said, you don't want to spend your entire life clicking and liking. I'm struck these days by how often people come up to me and ask to take a photograph instead of shaking hands, meeting one's eyes, and actually having a conversation. I urge everyone here to remember how important it is at whatever stage you are in your life to get outside of yourself and your own ambitions and to think about how to help those who are less fortunate. It feeds back into what you do and comes out in your work. But I think you'll also find it deeply fulfilling in its own right. When you live with intention, you create the space to achieve true excellence in every sense. I am certain many of you already know this intuitively. That's why you're all here at Oxford. Thank you for having me.
Listen again.
I'm Anna, and so I want to start by saying what an honor it is to be here for me today. It's a real thrill for me because I come from a highly academic family. I had a brother and a cousin at Oxford, a sister at Cambridge, a grandfather who taught law at Harvard. Both my parents went to Cambridge, so obviously deeply intimidated, I left school at 16 and went straight to work. It's a path I sometimes regret, especially seeing my own children make friends for life at university and seeing how incredibly important that time was to them for figuring things out. Thanks to my own English training, I arrived at New York Magazine in my early days in Manhattan, knowing how to do a little bit of everything. The men who ran the magazine weren't that familiar with fashion, and they were just so relieved when they realized that I could chat with the designers, talk to the advertisers, produce shoots, write and edit. I was a one-woman show. My point being that when you understand the nuts and bolts of how something works, in my case a magazine, in the case of all the young people I hire today, it's probably an iPhone 6, it makes you better at what you're doing rather than just being good at one thing. People who are very narrow in their focus are really frustrating. This is also a problem for many large, long-established companies. They tend to get very, very set in their ways. One of the things I always look for, whether it's in a collection or a piece of writing or a photograph or a job candidate, is a point of view. My advice to you is to trust and to cultivate your taste. This is a real moment in our culture when your opinion matters. Everybody wants to know how you work, what you like, how you think. It's important to reach people of your generation today to know what the so-called millennials are up to, because there is, for the first time in decades, a true generation gap. A lot of people in the positions of authority, decision makers, want to reach your generation because they understand how powerful it is that you're communicating through social networks in such a vital way. If you like something, tweet something, put it up on Instagram, that's an incredible tool. And it's one that influencers all over the world want to harness. You have a voice simply by the choices you make and the way that you live. So that said, you don't want to spend your entire life clicking and liking. I'm struck these days by how often people come up to me and ask to take a photograph instead of shaking hands, meeting one's eyes, and actually having a conversation. I urge everyone here to remember how important it is at whatever stage you are in your life to get outside of yourself and your own ambitions and to think about how to help those who are less fortunate. It feeds back into what you do and comes out in your work. But I think you'll also find it deeply fulfilling in its own right. When you live with intention, you create the space to achieve true excellence in every sense. I am certain many of you already know this intuitively. That's why you're all here at Oxford. Thank you for having me.
This is the end of task 2. Now turn to task 3. Task 3. Listen to an extract from an interview with Lynn Truss and the travel writer Jeff Dyer. Read the sentences 1 to 11 and mark each sentence T, true, or F, false, according to the extract. Write T, true, or F, false, in the table on the answer sheet. Sentence 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the questions.
Hello, I'm Lynn Truss, and for over 25 years I've been a full-time writer, And somehow, without making it a conscious ambition, I find I've travelled to a huge number of destinations. Enough that I'm always announcing, I've been there, when places come up on the telly. But if you ask me, do I like travelling, I'll say, absolutely not, I hate it. I find it utterly stressful, and I'm slightly horrified by the amount of travelling other people willingly put themselves through. So, just what do we hope to get from the experience of going somewhere else? Is the hassle of delayed flights, airless rooms, endless queues, the heat, mosquitoes and the dysentery all really worth it? I'm joined in the studio by writer Jeff Dyer, whose travel books include Yoga for People Who Can't Be Bothered to Do It and White Sands, which combine personal experience with philosophical thought and insight. They're also absolutely hilarious. So, Jeff, where did the travel bug come from?
The travel bug came from the way that I had absolutely no desire to go anywhere. I mean, it really wasn't. You know, sometimes you meet these people, they're sons or daughters of diplomats. So from a very early age, they were on the move. My experience was the opposite. I mean, both of my parents died without ever having been on an aeroplane, which is quite unusual, I think, almost inconceivable now. We would occasionally go on holidays to these English coastal resorts, but they were always not just miserable times because of the vagaries of the weather, but they would always involve what for my dad was the most horrendous experience, spending money. So, you know, we'd always, I just remember him being so shocked by the price of a choc ice, which he felt had been bumped up because it was a tourist resort. So after a while, we stopped going anywhere and just spent the summers at home where we could indulge in that great activity, saving money.
So what was your first travel adventure? When did you actually hit the road?
The very first time I did go abroad, I remember this very clearly. It was between A-levels and going to university. And with two friends, we drove around Europe, which basically meant France, Italy and Germany, in my friend's Mini Cooper. And we were camping. So, I mean, what I find strange about that now is I must have been the same height at 18 that I am now, 6'3". Three of us in a Mini Cooper. It didn't seem particularly cramped at all. Obviously, back then, when you're 18, you know, you don't even know the meaning of the word back pain. And I remember we had one beer in Paris, and it seemed like the most expensive beer there'd ever been. All we were ever doing was driving around in our car or going to campsites, but still we were in this incredible other world, Europe, and it just seemed so fantastic.
So obviously it's about the impact on you. I mean, you do feel when you go somewhere that the place will act on you in some way. So is there a sort of pilgrimage aspect to this that you expect transcendence when you go to a place?
Well, I can answer this question in several ways. What I have no desire to do is go on holiday because I can see that you want to go on holiday if you're stuck in a job that you maybe don't like. Whereas, you know, the writing life, you're always on holiday, you're always working. So I do like to travel, let's say, with a purpose. And one of the things that lends travel a purpose is some sort of pilgrimage.
So where would you say has really moved you and inspired you?
In my early 30s, living in Paris, I had this great desire to go to visit the cemeteries of the First World War. So I went up to northern France, not really knowing where to go. And from my map, I saw that there was a British memorial near Thiepval. And I got there. It was summer. There's this beautiful kind of rolling countryside, blue skies, really idyllic countryside. And there I came to this huge monument on which was written just these words, the missing of the Somme. It was this monument designed by Sir Edwin Lutyens to the 70,000 British and Commonwealth dead whose bodies were never found, or if their bodies were found, they were unidentifiable. And there was such an incredible sense of arrival at that moment because my grandfather had fought in the First World War. And it made me conscious after that I love these places where, if you like, where history was manifest in geography.
So what would life be like for you if you couldn't travel?
On the one hand, it would be inconceivable. On the other hand, it would be like if you asked me, what would life be like if you had to have your left arm amputated tomorrow? Well, it would be terrible, but it wouldn't be as terrible as it was 20 years ago, because I'd have then missed out on 20 years of tennis playing without my left arm. And probably the years of peak travel are behind me, in the sense of the years of peak adventure. I'd liken it in a way just to nights out. You know, nights out in your 20s are these great nights of adventure. Anything could happen. And then as you get older, a night out tends to mean going to a restaurant. In the same way, I feel that my travel, which used to be more of a form of adventure or even, to exaggerate, a form of exploration, that's given way now to more kind of going to places in order to give talks, that kind of thing, and enjoying being in places. But yeah, the great period of Thesiger-like or Scott of the Antarctic-like exploration, I think, is in the past for me now. But my future would be terrible if I hadn't already been to those places.
Jeff, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Listen again.
Hello, I'm Lynn Truss, and for over 25 years I've been a full-time writer. And somehow, without making it a conscious ambition, I find I've travelled to a huge number of destinations. Enough that I'm always announcing, I've been there, when places come up on the telly. But if you ask me, do I like travelling, I'll say, absolutely not, I hate it. I find it utterly stressful, and I'm slightly horrified by the amount of travelling other people willingly put themselves through. So, just what do we hope to get from the experience of going somewhere else? Is the hassle of delayed flights, airless rooms, endless queues, the heat, mosquitoes and the dysentery all really worth it? I'm joined in the studio by writer Jeff Dyer, whose travel books include Yoga for People Who Can't Be Bothered to Do It and White Sands, which combine personal experience with philosophical thought and insight. They're also absolutely hilarious. So, Jeff, where did the travel bug come from?
The travel bug came from the way that I had absolutely no desire to go anywhere. I mean, it really wasn't. You know, sometimes you meet these people, they're sons or daughters of diplomats. So from a very early age, they were on the move. My experience was the opposite. I mean, both of my parents died without ever having been on an aeroplane, which is quite unusual, I think, almost inconceivable now. We would occasionally go on holidays to these English coastal resorts, but they were always not just miserable times because of the vagaries of the weather, but they would always involve what for my dad was the most horrendous experience, spending money. So, you know, we'd always, I just remember him being so shocked by the price of a choc ice, which he felt had been bumped up because it was a tourist resort. So after a while, we stopped going anywhere and just spent the summers at home where we could indulge in that great activity, saving money.
So what was your first travel adventure? When did you actually hit the road?
The very first time I did go abroad, I remember this very clearly. It was between A-levels and going to university. And with two friends, we drove around Europe, which basically meant France, Italy and Germany, in my friend's Mini Cooper. And we were camping. So, I mean, what I find strange about that now is I must have been the same height at 18 that I am now, 6'3". Three of us in a Mini Cooper. It didn't seem particularly cramped at all. Obviously, back then, when you're 18, you know, you don't even know the meaning of the word back pain. And I remember we had one beer in Paris, and it seemed like the most expensive beer there'd ever been. All we were ever doing was driving around in our car or going to campsites, but still we were in this incredible other world, Europe, and it just seemed so fantastic.
So obviously it's about the impact on you. I mean, you do feel when you go somewhere that the place will act on you in some way. So is there a sort of pilgrimage aspect to this, that you expect transcendence when you go to a place?
Well, I can answer this question in several ways. What I have no desire to do is go on holiday, because I can see that you want to go on holiday if you're stuck in a job that you maybe don't like. Whereas, you know, the writing life, you're always on holiday, you're always working. So I do like to travel, let's say, with a purpose. And one of the things that lends travel a purpose is some sort of pilgrimage.
So where would you say has really moved you and inspired you?
In my early 30s, living in Paris, I had this great desire to go to visit the cemeteries of the First World War. So I went up to northern France, not really knowing where to go. And from my map, I saw that there was a British memorial near Thiepval. And I got there. It was summer. There's this beautiful kind of rolling countryside, blue skies, really idyllic countryside. And there I came to this huge monument on which was written just these words, "The Missing of the Somme." It was this monument designed by Sir Edwin Lutyens to the 70,000 British and Commonwealth dead whose bodies were never found, or if their bodies were found, they were unidentifiable. And there was such an incredible sense of arrival at that moment, because my grandfather had fought in the First World War. And it made me conscious after that I loved these places where, if you like, where history was manifest in geography.
So what would life be like for you if you couldn't travel?
On the one hand, it would be inconceivable. On the other hand, it would be like if you asked me, what would life be like if you had to have your left arm amputated tomorrow? Well, it would be terrible, but it wouldn't be as terrible as it was 20 years ago, because I'd have then missed out on 20 years of tennis playing without my left arm. And probably the years of peak travel are behind me, in the sense of the years of peak adventure. I'd liken it in a way just to nights out. You know, nights out in your 20s are these great nights of adventure. Anything could happen. And then as you get older, a night out tends to mean going to a restaurant. In the same way, I feel that my travel, which used to be more of a form of adventure, or even, to exaggerate, a form of exploration, that's given way now to more kind of going to places in order to give talks, that kind of thing, and enjoying being in places. But yeah, the great period of Thesiger-like or Scott of the Antarctic-like exploration, I think, is in the past for me now. But my future would be terrible if I hadn't already been to those places.
Jeff, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
This is the end of task 3. Now you have 3 minutes to write your answers on the answer sheet. This is the end of the listening comprehension test.